For more information on ancient dragon Zengate and Taigen's teachings, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please click on the link for Just Give on our website.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome. New folks, I'm Taigen Layton, the teacher here at Ancient Dragon Zengate, and welcome. I'm very happy tonight to have Jeremy Hertzberg, who's our work leader and member of our practice council and main person taking care of our website, giving the talk tonight. Thank you very much, Jeremy.
Bear with me tonight. I have, I'm recovering from a cold. So I think the cold is actually going to decide how long this talk is. So first I'd like to thank my teacher, Taigen, I don't think I can really say what, but thank you. And something I forgot to do last time I gave a talk was to really kind of voice my appreciation for our lineage in America and embracing women in our, just embracing women as they should. I think that our lineage is really, as I've observed it, really proactive about like just doing what should be done all along, which is being very inclusive. And when I was at Tassajara, you know, four out of the five teachers were women, and they all taught me a lot about things that I think are unique from a woman's perspective. So tonight, I want to talk to you about a sutra that I actually found at Tassajara, and it's a sutra that is, I'd say it's the most advanced sutra I've ever seen, because I think it hits so deeply to my own practice. And I think maybe other people might not find it such an advanced teaching, and I think that's why there's probably so many teachings. But, you know, the sutra, actually part of the sutra is kind of like warning the reader or the listener about how advanced of a teaching it actually is. It's actually built into the sutra as part of it. The sutra is called the Sutra on Knowing the Better Way to Catch a Snake. That's Thich Nhat Hanh's, the way he translated it. And I'm actually reading it from a book that compiled a bunch of sutras that he translated. And before we begin, he uses the word intelligent a lot in his when he translated it and we talked about it. And I think in our culture we value intelligence greatly, but we value kind of like a very selective type of intelligence, like solve for X kind of intelligence, a very discriminative type of intelligence. These are just my own personal feelings that the type of intelligence he's talking about is not maybe the normal way we think of as intelligent. And I think Dogen puts it best in Fukan's Zengi when he says, intelligence or lack of it is not an issue. Make no distinction between the dull and sharp-witted. If you concentrate your effort single-mindedly, that in itself is wholeheartedly engaging the way. And even though he begins by saying intelligence or lack of it is not an issue, I actually think that this is what Thich Nhat Hanh is pointing towards when he uses the word intelligence, is this wholeheartedly engaging the way in the practice. And it's not to say that discriminating mind is not included in that, but it's not depended on. And I think that that's a pretty important distinction in my own practice, and it's pretty important to me. So without further ado, I'm going to kind of like come back to the beginning of the sutra, but I'm just going to say the sutra starts with a monk telling other monks that the Buddha actually says that sense pleasures are not an obstacle to practice, which in the early Buddhist teachings, The Buddha made it very clear that they were. And the a couple of monks actually confront this monk and say, you know, is it true that you're saying this thing that the Buddha said, sense pleasures are not an obstacle to practice? And the monk says, yes, this is what I'm saying. And they ask him three times, and, you know, three times he says, no, actually, I think this is true. And he really holds it, you know, as a conviction. And so they take him to the Buddha because the Buddha's alive and can answer questions. And, you know, the Buddha actually kind of, he rips him one. And he, you know, he really scorns him and lets him have it. And you know, by the end of it, you know, the sutra says that he was hurt and upset and can think of nothing to say at all. So really he was like, you know, really browbeaten, which is, you know, Buddha is the model of skillfulness. So perhaps this was the most skillful thing at that point in time. So I'd like to start after that and then come back to that later. And if I forget, please remind me. So the Buddha says then, says, monks, it is important to understand my teachings thoroughly before you teach or put them into practice. If you have not understood the meaning of any teaching I give, please ask me or one of the elder brothers in the Dharma or one of the others who is excellent in their practice about it. There are always some people who do not understand the letter or the spirit of a teaching and, in fact, take it the opposite way of it, of what it was intended. Whether the teachings are offered in the form of verse or prose predictions, verse summaries, independent origination, similes, spontaneous utterances, quotations, stories or previous births, wonderful occurrences, detailed commentaries or clarifications with definitions, there are always some people who study only to satisfy their curiosity or win arguments, and not for the sake of liberation. With such a motivation, they miss the true spirit of the teaching. They may go through much hardship, endure difficulties, and are not of much benefit, and eventually exhaust themselves. I think this is the part, when I read this, that I really kind of like woke up a little bit, and I said, oh my gosh, this one's for me. When I was thinking about what to talk about in relation to this sutra, I really wanted to knock it out of the park. You know, I really wanted to like come up here, sit down, and just like blow your minds. You know, I just really wanted to get it right. And I think part of what he's, what the Buddha's saying is, you know, he's kind of saying like, don't do it to get fame. Don't do it to so that other people will like you. Don't do it for these, you know, reasons that are not aligned with the aid and liberation of other beings and the aid and liberation of oneself. But before this, also, he gives pretty much the primer, a really good way of saying, like, Sangha practice is really where it's at because we're going to get it wrong. And or maybe, you know, maybe wrong is maybe not the right way to put it, but we're gonna, you know, maybe get stuck in our learning about the Dharma. And it's really good to ask for help. And I know, beginning in my own practice, there are a number of times when I would talk to Taigen or other people at the here at Ancient Dragon and just say, well, the Buddha said this, the Buddha said that, the Buddha said this, and, you know, and hopefully. Usually the person that I was talking to was nice enough to say, well, you know, that's not really how it was going, and maybe consider this. And I think without that correspondence, that Sangha practice, I probably would have just kind of kept my own rigid views. I think that's exactly what the Buddha's pointing to right here. So, he though then goes on to say, a person who studies that way, and he's referring to someone who's trying to gain something, who studies that way can be compared to a man trying to catch a poisonous snake in the wild. If he reaches out his hand, the snake may bite his hand, leg, or some other part of his body. Trying to catch a snake that way has no advantages and can only create suffering. So this is the first time he mentions the snake, which is kind of like the name of the sutra, but we'll continue on.
He says, monks, understanding my teaching in the wrong way is the same. If you do not practice the Dharma correctly, you may come to understand it as the opposite of what was intended. But if you practice it intelligently, you will understand both the letter and the spirit of this teaching, and you will be able to explain them correctly. Do not practice just to show off or argue with others. Practice to attain liberation, and if you do, you'll have little pain or exhaustion.
I usually need things repeated at least two or three times, sometimes more, before I get it. And so I'm so glad these early sutras are written like this. So he comes back and says, don't practice to show off or argue with others. Practice to attain liberation. I think sometimes maybe we might practice to show off, or we might learn something to say it to, you know, have praise. You may not be like this. I know that I am someone who can do this sometimes. Maybe I like to learn an interesting fact and say it so that somebody will think I'm cool. But I think when I start off saying this is an advanced teaching, this is exactly what I'm talking about, because it's just hit so hard at, I think, what's prevalent in this culture of having to be someone that's really smart, or having to be someone that's really special that does these great things, and you have to show everybody that you're this special and this great. In the sutra, the Buddha is saying the exact opposite, really. He's saying, don't do that. He's saying, practice to attain liberation. And practicing to attain liberation means not learning things to show off or argue. So, he says then, monks, an intelligent student of the Dharma is like a man who uses a forked stick to catch a snake. When he sees a poisonous snake in the wild, he places the stick right below the head of the snake and grabs the snake's neck with his hand. Even if the snake winds itself around the man's hand, leg, or another part of his body, it will not bite him. This is the better way to catch a snake, and it will not lead to pain or exhaustion. So, at Tassajara, so there was five teachers, so I had a lot of Dokusan. And when I was talking to one of the teachers about this, somehow the way I was explaining the sutra, the person said, well, here at Tassajara, we don't manhandle the snakes around here. We have like this little tool that you can use to go and grab the snake and put them away. That's also that's a better way to catch a snake. But back in the day, this was the way to do it, to take a stick and, you know, kind of immobilize the snake and go in and grab it. It wasn't to harm the snake or destroy it. It's really just a nice, effective way that the person doesn't get bit and the snake doesn't die and we're moving. I think, I didn't know if I was going to say that, but after I had, after I had this talk with this person who was really, you know, had been practicing for a long time, I felt like it's really important that the sutra is not talking about like just really tearing the snake up and getting out of the way. It's like nicely just find a way, you know, to get the snake, you know, pick it up and move it along, so we don't get bit. Continues on, says, monks, a son or daughter of good family who studies the Dharma needs to apply the utmost skill to understanding the letter and the spirit of the teachings. He or she should not study with the aim of boasting, debating, or arguing, but only to attain liberation. Studying in this way with intelligence, he or she will have little pain or exhaustion. Monks, I have told you many times the importance of knowing when it is time to let go of a raft and not hold on to it unnecessarily. When a mountain stream overflows and becomes a torrent of floodwater carrying debris, a man or woman who wants to get across might think, what is the safest way to cross this floodwater? Assessing the situation, she may decide to gather branches and grasses, construct a raft, and use it to cross the other side. But after arriving on the other side, she thinks, I spent a lot of time and energy building this raft. It is a prized possession, and I will carry it with me as I continue my journey.
If she puts it on her shoulders or head and carries it with her on land, monks, do you think that this would be intelligent? All the monks say, no, world-honored one. And then the Buddha says, how could she have acted more wisely? She could have thought, this raft helped me get across the water safely. Now I will leave it at the water's edge for someone else to use in the same way. Wouldn't that be more intelligent? Be a more intelligent thing to do? All the monks say yes. And the Buddha says, I have given this teaching on the raft many times to remind you how necessary it is to let go of all true teachings, not to mention teachings that are not true.
So cool. If you haven't read a lot of the older teachings or the very early teachings of the Buddha, the raft, you might be hearing the raft analogy for the very first time, but the raft analogy is quite popular. So basically, this person wants to use a raft to get one from one shore to the other. In classical teachings, there is this idea of two shores, shores of samsara and shore of nirvana. And the analogy is used in the same way of saying, in order to cross from one shore to the other, you could use a raft. And in the analogy, the raft is like a Buddhist teaching. So here, analogy is saying, like, you come to the shore, you see that there's a place to go, you build a raft, you go across. And the Buddha says, is it a good idea to keep the raft with you after you've crossed the shore? After all, you crossed the shore. Why keep going with the raft? He's saying, let go of the teaching. And I think that's kind of counterintuitive. It's almost like, you know, if you have a really good tool, you want to keep it with you at all times and hold on to it. But here the Buddha's saying, let it go. Let go even my own teachings, my really good teachings, my teachings that are aimed at liberation, my teachings that are aimed to end suffering. He says, let them go. It's pretty amazing.
Where to pick up? Okay, so he talks about the basis of six views, which I'm not going to go into. I think it would probably take some time. So the one of the monks asks the Buddha, said, world honored one, can fear and anxiety arise from an internal source?
So a source from within.
The Buddha replies, yes, fear and anxiety can arise from an internal source. If you think things that did not exist in the past have come to exist, but now no longer exist, you will feel sad or become confused and despairing. This is how fear and anxiety can arise from an internal source. So we continue on. It's a discussion. The monk asks, world honored one, can fear and anxiety from an internal source be prevented from arising?
This is maybe why I came to practice, maybe why many people come to practice.
How can we keep fear and anxiety from arising within ourselves? So the Buddha says, fear and anxiety from an internal source can be prevented from arising. If you do not think things that did not exist in the past have come to exist, but now no longer exist, you will not feel sad or become confused and despairing. This is how fear and anxiety from an internal source can be prevented from arising. So he says, things that did not exist in the past have come to exist, but now no longer exist. If you don't think that, so if you don't think that things are coming and going, you will not feel sad or become confused and despairing. So, I apologize for reading a lot, but it's important for the sutra. The Buddha then says, fear and anxiety, is this the monk or is this? So it says, fear and anxiety can arise from an external source. You may think, this is self. This is the world. This is myself. I will exist forever. Then if you meet the Buddha or a disciple of the Buddha who has the understanding and intelligence to teach you how to let go of all views of attachment to the body, the self, and the objects of the self, with a view to give up pride, internal formations, and energy links, and you think, this is the end of the world, I have to give up everything. I am not the world. I am not me. I am not the self. I will not exist forever. When I die, I will be completely annihilated. There is nothing to look forward to be joyful about, or to remember. You will feel sad and become confused and despairing. This is how fear and anxiety can arise from an external source. So, we'll go on, because he comments on it in the future. He says, World Honor Point, can fear and anxiety from an external source be prevented from arising? The Buddha taught, fear and anxiety from an external source can be prevented from arising if you do not think, this is the self, this is the world, this is myself, I will exist forever. Then if you meet the Buddha or a disciple of the Buddha who has the understanding and intelligence to teach you how to let go of all views of attachment to the body, the self, and the objects of the self, with the view of giving up pride, internal formations, and energy leaks, and do not think, this is the end of the world, I have to give up everything, I am not the world, I am not me, I am not the self, I will not exist forever. When I die, I will be completely annihilated. There is nothing to look forward to be joyful about, or to remember. You will not feel sad or become confused and despairing. This is how fear and anxiety from an external source can be prevented from arising. So, the Buddha is actually talking about the teaching of no self here. No self is a very complex teaching, because there's a barrier, I believe, in the idea of no self. And I say idea of no self because when we hear this no self thing, our idea is to then say, you know, then what am I? Because we interpret it quite literally. But the teaching of no self is not that there is not a self. The teaching of no self is that there is a, and it's split up in four pieces, that there is a past self, a future self, the self that will be, and the, I'm really sorry, actually. I'm drugged up from old medication. I can't think right now. So why don't I end this early with the best part of it? So basically the whole idea here is that good teachings and bad teachings should be let go. Suzuki Roshi talks about Zen mind, beginner's mind. Beginner mind holds on to nothing. Beginner mind experiences everything as it is new. Ajahn Chah says, do everything with a mind that lets go. Don't accept praise or gain or anything else. If you let go a little, you will have a little peace. If you let go a lot, you will have a little, or you have a lot of peace. If you let go completely, you will have complete peace. Within the sutra, back when the Buddha is talking about the raft, he makes it very clear that you should hold on to no teaching, absolutely no teaching. When you cross from one shore to the other, you should let go of the raft. And in Mahayana teachings, we actually don't make a distinction between shores. Maybe there's a distinction, but it's let go. So I guess it's always important, and I should have started my talk off with this, if any of this talk doesn't make sense to you, please let the talk go and continue on in your practice. That's really it. I mean, just, you know, I apologize. It's so funny when you're talking. I don't know if you guys have ever experienced this. When you're talking and then in the middle of you know, you're saying something and then you realize, like, what am I even saying? Like, what's going on here? Maybe this is the best way that I can say this, that to let go of every teaching is by giving you guys a mixed up teaching. But yeah, I think it's best that we end there. I appreciate all of you guys for sitting there very nicely.
So you let go of your talk in the middle of the talk.
Yeah, exactly.
A great teaching in non-self. So, as you were starting to say, non-self is a very simple and complicated teaching. And so I'll just invite comments, responses, additions, supplements. Mai?
Something that arose in my mind regarding the raft. It's, I forget the name of the artist, but his, his work ostensibly was to live in this house that he had built for a period of time. And then he would disassemble the house, create a raft. He would then cross a body of water with this built raft. And then he would disassemble the raft and then rebuild it as a house to live in it on the other shore. So I wonder, in the context of what we've been speaking about, how you may think about such an endeavor. To anyone, I'm just...
Actually, this, your question, Mai, I mean, really bears on what I was going to ask you, Jeremy. And this image of the raft, I've had a little trouble with it. You know, as you say in the Mahayana, at some point, you know, the distinction between the two sides of the river is let go of. But that letting go of that distinction is the river that we've got to cross, right, in some sense. Mm-hmm. And we're given tools for doing that. You know, so two things. And first one's kind of an aside. You know, I've been practicing, and maybe this is more of a 70s thing or something, but, you know, you would hear people say, you know, you've got to give up the raft, hang on the raft.
Yeah.
And the deal was that a lot of people were talking about letting go of the raft before they employed it. Mm. You know, which either means you stay stuck on one side or, you know, you get out to the middle of the river. So that's one thing. I think, I mean, So I wonder, you know, I wonder what the Buddha's intent is in that teaching, and I'm wondering if that's really for the people who've really gone some ways in the practice, and that we ought to be a little careful about doing it prematurely. This other idea, this guy who makes the raft and then takes it and disassembles it and builds it into a house to dwell in, to live in on the other side, I really like that because, I mean, I was thinking about it, and I was thinking, well, okay, so what are the tools? What is the raft? You know, there are these teachings that we're giving. You know, that consists largely of things like the precepts and the paramitas and, you know, all these kinds of things. And you might, indeed, I can't imagine them, but there might be reasons to let go of those at some point or in some instances, not get caught by, as you say, the letter of the teachings. On the other hand, you know, if you're a serious practitioner, you know, why not, you know, disassemble the raft, build those things up, and continue to let them be your refuge and your shelter, you know what I mean? It's like, why would you give up the precepts? Why would you give up the paramitas?
Yeah.
Why would you give up the raft?
Yeah.
Besides the path. So you answer my question?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I think one of the things that will irritate me the most is when someone tells me, just get over it, man. Like that kind of like, just total disregard for maybe what I'm going through, what I'm thinking at that point. Just get over it. And you know, there is one side of it that is as simple as, yeah, just get over it. But there's also a process of, you know, interacting with the teachings. It's said that the Buddha gave the appropriate teaching for whoever he was talking to. So for some people, it's very good to say, there is samsara and there is nirvana. Build a raft, get over, and let the teachings go. And for someone else, there may be a whole other teaching that's needed. You know, and I think having that kind of like top-down view.
Needed for what?
teaching for what, you know, who am I to say? I mean, it's like...
For that person.
Yeah, for that person. You know.
For that person to do what? I mean, the language is usually to get over, you know, to...
Well, okay, so... Well, so part of what I was trying to emphasize was that these teachings are for liberation. In Mahayana, we stress liberation of all beings. All beings are ourselves, but also all beings are all beings in whatever way that we can and whatever way we can skillfully do. And so that this is what the teachings are for. They're for liberation. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's... Take it in.
Since Nyesan mentioned it, I was thinking as you were talking, there is a place in Dogen's extensive record where he says, people always say to let go of the raft and you get to the other shore. On the other hand, please carry it as you climb, as you climb up to the mountains and on the other shore. So, you know, there's, you can even let go of that teaching anyway. Roy.
I'm going to drop the whole, I don't know how to get to the rope analogy with this, but you know, I sometimes think that carrying the teaching is like carrying Jell-O. And that if you squeeze it, it's not going to get very far, and you're going to make a mess of it. And so, to me, the question of, you know, when do we let go of the boat, you're already grasping the boat. And rather than just simply allowing the boat to carry you across. I'm mixing metaphors here. But I think that whether we're on this shore, that shore, or halfway in the stream, we don't have to know. We just take the teaching and use it for what its value is without grasping it too hard so that we come to fixed views of this is what the Buddha said and this is, you know, and this is right and don't argue with me, kind of us versus them, right versus wrong. And I think the Buddha sometimes, when people would grab onto it too tight, he would yell at them and scare them and get them to drop it. For other people, it was, chill out, dude. You know, let's relax a little bit. You know, everybody deals with it differently, but I think in the end, not to hang on to it too tight, but to realize no matter how we understand it, there's an element that, you know, we're human, we aren't going to catch it all. You know, it's our limited view no matter what. But by holding it with an open hand, we allow for other interpretations. We allow for breezes to come through it. We don't see it as tight and fixed and a solid thing, but rather something that's flexible and fixed for what we need.
Yes.
First, thank you for the talk. I enjoyed it. What I heard or thought of when you were talking about taking the raft across the stream is that you're taking that stream is something you're traversing, and the raft is that tool that you need to be very mindful of as you're getting across the stream. And once you finally arrive on the other side, that teaching, that what the raft is, becomes a part of you, and you don't have to consciously be aware of it for so long, and you can leave it behind because it's now a part of you, and getting to the other side is traversing that challenge, and you're there. And so it's kind of like the pop culture reference of 10,000 hours of practice makes you an expert at something. Well, getting across that stream is kind of like doing your 10,000 hours, and you don't have to think about it anymore. It's just automatic. That's what I was thinking of when telling the story.
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, I was going to tell a story. It's just a story about a time at Tassajara where I had this, like, just, you know, an experience. It was getting really deep into practice. And talking to teachers about that experience, and the teacher had said, well, you know, that's awakening. What your experience is awakening. It's enlightenment. You experience, you know, these things. And it's, you know, after that experience, you know, I still get quite upset sometimes. And just the other day when I was coughing so hard that everything hurt and I was like shaking and my girlfriend was trying to help me and I was yelling at her and the whole thing was a huge mess. And it's like, you know what? I had this really great experience, but I'm still, you know, still this guy, You know, it's like, I don't know, you know, I don't know if there's a 10,000 hour expert level. You know, I don't know. But I will say that I apologized to her after, you know, after I yelled at her. Yeah, you know, I think that in America, we think that getting over to the other side of, you know, getting over to the other side means that we're going to find our parking spot whenever we want, you know, and things are going to be great. You know, and I don't know if I don't think that's what you were saying, but, you know, I think it's...
And there's also the song, Many Rivers to Cross.
Yeah, yeah.
I want to claim the things. Get it right, and I want to look for results. I look at industry, it's very clear cut, you know, you can see it in results. I got to be careful here because I'm wondering, am I saying this to impress everybody, or am I saying it because it's real? I'm reminded of the story of how there was a tribe in Africa who captured monkeys by putting food in a gourd. And the monkey can put its hand in and get the food, but then it squeezes it and it can't pull its hand out. And that's how they catch the monkey. And the monkey never lets go.
Wow.
And I'm just thinking of how I am my own life, you know. I'm grabbing on to, and I think it's a metaphor to bring to the sangha about how we get caught.
Yeah.
And, thank you.
Yeah, that's a wonderful metaphor. Yeah, there's another story that Thich Nhat Hanh refers to about an old man who he goes off to hunt, and while he's away, some raiders come in and they just destroy the village and take some of the people as slaves. And when the guy comes back, he sees a corpse. It's a burning corpse, and he has a child. And he looks at the corpse and he says, "That's my child. It's my dead child." And he takes the ash from the body, and he puts it in a pouch and he wears it around his neck, and he keeps it with him his entire life. And later on in his life, his son escapes from the robbers. He's much older, and he comes up to the man. He says, "You know, this is my name. I'm your son." And the guy says, no, my son's right here." And he's referring to the pouch. He says, "My son's right here. You can't possibly be my son." And so, you know, when I heard that story, I was like, "Oh yeah, it's very similar."
Last comment.
I just wanted to say that, as far as intelligence, I think for me anyway, intelligence, it comes from, you know, the creator. It comes from spirits, you know, the spirit animal. When the spirit animal knows that it needs you, you know, it will come to you and it will give you, you know, knowledge. It will give you guidance, you know, altruism, you know, whatever you need. And, you know, courage, loyalty, and also the spirits, or it could be a loved one that passed away, you know, the knowledge and the wisdom that it's giving you, it wants you to apply it into your life, and so that you will learn and you will become a better person and you will be able to help, you know, others. Like for me, I'm a teacher, you know, and I wake up at like 4 o'clock in the morning. And I say to myself, how am I going to win this war? You know, I mean, So, you know, I mean, and so I need that, you know, I need, you know, the creator to give me strength, you know. And like today, I was at Sears and my mom was, you know, at the repair center. And I was going to get the car to, to pick up the microwave that got repaired. And I was getting ready, I put my car in reverse, and I was getting ready to back up, and something was holding my leg down. And it was like this force, and I couldn't back up, and I was like all nervous and scared. And so I couldn't back up, and I'm looking at this black SUV on this side, and then I'm looking over here, nothing's coming. I'm looking over here, nothing's coming, but I couldn't back up. And then all of a sudden, I look behind me, and this five-year-old boy runs behind me, my car. I see his head and he's like running behind me. And if I didn't have that, you know, I would have backed up over that kid, you know. And then his mom is like yelling, and I see the kid, you know, coming over to the SUV. And so I know, and I told my brother, he was waiting at Sears also with my mom, and he's like, that's how it is, you know. It's like you had, you know, a warning, you know, to not, you know, back up, because I would have ran over that kid if I would have backed up. So.
Yeah, thank you for not.
Yeah.
Well, on that note, we don't know how things work and how it is that we can be helpful. So we'll chant the four Bodhisattva vows, which we chant three times. There in the next to last page of your chant book.
Beings are numberless. I vow to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I vow to realize it. Beings are numberless. I vow to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I vow to realize it. Beings are numberless. I vow to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless.